Thanks for coming. I want to give you a brief introduction today about how to talk to the media. Media being, for the most part, me, because I'm mostly talking from my own experience. I'm a writer with TechCrunch. Some of you have hopefully heard of it. It's a large technology public blog publication. It's really a professional media organization at this point. In the US, millions of readers every month. And we mostly cover the kind of stuff you guys do, startups. We cover startups at any stage, early, late, really late, like Google and Microsoft. We cover the companies that influence startups, like Google, Microsoft, Apple, the big ones, the ones that you are interested in as well, the ones that influence the kind of programs you can write, the kind of projects you can do. And every day I talk to two or three startups at least, on the phone or in person. So I've seen a lot in that time. I worked at TechCrunch for a year now. Let me see if I can make this work for a second here. I'm going to go out here. Yes, thank you. Just to give you an idea of what we do. This is dangerous. This is my live Gmail inbox. The number I wanted to show you, these are my unread messages. The number I wanted to show you is the one up there on the right. That's 60,000 unread messages. That's what you're up against. These are 60,000 pictures for the most part. Hopefully there's nothing embargoed in there that you're going to blog about now. Don't, no blogging. That's what you're up against. These are all people that send a pitch that did not get read, by me at least. We've got 15 writers. Many of these pitches got read by somebody, but definitely not by me. And there's reasons for why some of those just didn't make it through the process. Let me go back into the presentation. All right. So how do you get to talk to us? You're already in a good spot because you're here. You can grab me anytime. You can grab any of the other press that's here. You can talk to them. That's good. But once you leave, it becomes a lot harder. And there's a lot of people who just don't know you yet, who may not even know about Imagine Cup. So how do you talk to those people? There's some basics, and I just want to go through a couple of the basics. This is pretty much engaging with the press 101. You got to figure out, are you even ready to talk to the press? Don't talk to us unless at least you have a good prototype ready, unless you have a demo you can show us. You got one chance. You're up against all these thousands of other startups. You got one chance to make a really good impression on us. One chance. Because we got a lot of these. Everybody in the business gets a lot of these. Whether you pitch TechCrunch, the next web, Mashable, whatever your target audience is, one chance. Get it right the first time. We're going to talk about how to get it right next. So don't be scared. There's ways of getting it right. There's lots of ways of getting it wrong. But there's ways of getting it right. Make sure you've got the right ingredients in your pitch when you get in touch with us, and we're going to talk about what those ingredients are. One of the basics, the thing everybody in your team needs to know, everybody, is a 30-second pitch. You've got to have it down. Elevator pitch. It's called elevator pitch for a reason. When I'm up on the 8th floor, and you get on the elevator with me, you got 20 seconds. You say, oh, it's press. I want to talk to you. I really want you to write about me. You got 30 seconds to impress me. It sounds really arrogant. I know that. But that's just the way it is. Because there's going to be somebody else downstairs who wants to talk to me, and maybe you go right to the ping pong tables, and I go left to the press room. So, elevator pitch. Tell me who you are, what problem your product solves, and do that really, really fast. That's the key is this is different. A pitch like that is different from an Imagine Cup presentation. A lot of the Imagine Cup presentations start with, here's a problem. Beekeeping, bees are dying, we've got lots of issues. Elevator pitch is different. It's, we are big data analytics for beekeepers, and we're doing this for XYZ reason. You pretty much turn your pitch around. I am the CEO of company I wrote about yesterday that's here, Beezinga. I'm the CEO of Beezinga. We're big data analytics for beekeeping. I was, whoa, that's cool, beekeeping, big data. That's never heard that, right? You all have a story you can tell like that. You all have really, really great projects, and you can tell that story. Fast, succinct, let's get it done, 30 seconds. And it's not just one person on the team that needs to know this. Everybody needs to have this down, because you don't know who's going to, your coder, who's really, you know, timid, doesn't want to be in front of it. Yeah, it happens. It's, you know, we're all geeks. When I was in high school, you wouldn't get me up on a stage like this, I can tell you that. They got to have that down. You can practice it. You can memorize it if you want to. You know, pitch competitions, Silicon Valley, big deal. It's kind of like Imagine Cup. People present these things. Sometimes they get a minute. We do a hackathon before a conference. Last time, there was 160 entries, I think. All these guys got up on stage and gave a 30-second to one-minute pitch. That's all the time they got. And I think they could win $5,000 or something like that. $50,000 would be a little bit much. We don't have that much money. All right, so that's one basic thing. The second basic thing you just have to have for your group is a media kit. It's just helpful. It's not an absolute must-have, but if you want to do well, you want to get through the noise, it's really helpful to have. It's kind of like the longer, think of that as your Imagine Cup presentation. It's got all the info. You've got 10 minutes, not 30 seconds. What are the highlights about your company? What do you do? What are the highlights? You went to Imagine Cup. Great, that should be in there. You got funding. Perfect, have it in there. A really detailed description of what your product does. This is the spot where you can go in depth. This is the spot where you've got lots of time. You can fill 3-4 pages with this. It's fine. Maybe use bullet points, not just a wall of text. That would be really helpful because, you know, you got to read a lot. You can talk numbers, statistics, technologies. And let me just interject there for a second. Technologies. One thing to know about most reporters, we're not that technical. Yeah. You may know what kind of, you know, MVC framework you're using for, you know, Python. I can do something with that. Most of my colleagues can't. You know, they're writers. They know how to use technology, they know the market, they know how to evaluate it, they know funding, but they don't really know the technologies. So just keep that in mind when you're talking to us. Don't come up, you know, your pitch can't be, we're using this great new, you know, framework for R doing statistics, and it's awesome, and we can do so much. And pitch is about your product. It's about what you can, the problem you can solve. It's the technology, for the most part, for most of us, even the tech reporters, it's just, be a little bit careful when you go into the, you know, real depth of your technologies. Anyway, side note. Screenshots, high-res screenshots, by the way. The days where it was just 640 pixels that you could put on a screen are kind of over. Most of us now have publications that can display for, you know, retina displays, really high DPI displays. So make sure you have those. 640 used to be the standard kind of in the industry. It's done. And put it on your website. Maybe have a little media kit website. A lot of companies do that. Or just make it downloadable on SkyDrive, Dropbox, whatever, you know, floats your boat. Make it available there. Put it also, you know, in an email when you pitch us, or just have a link to it. It's pretty much the same. All right, here's a question I get all the time. When should I actually come to you? And that's difficult. It depends a little bit on the author. But for the most part, that's not the slide I wanted to have here. Sorry. That's I got that the other way around in my draft. Let's do it this way. All right, let's do it the other way around. When should you pitch a story that's a news story? We get a lot of pitches for news stories that aren't really news. We get pitches for, you know, hey, we changed our name a little bit, or you know, we added a Facebook login to our site. We've got millions of readers. They're not really that interested in when you add, you know, Google Plus login to your website. These are kind of the five major points where you want to engage with us. You got your prototype ready. You're doing something really cool, like here, Imagine Cup. Prototype is there. We want to talk to you. We want to show it. It's really cool. We're going to make it a product. Good point to talk to us. You're launching. And that can be a beta launch. It can be a closed beta launch. Doesn't matter. Maybe you have some invite codes for us to give away. It's still very popular. You know, we're launching a closed beta, but here are 500 invitations for your best friends. So here's a link. The first 500 people can sign up right now. Major product updates, not the small ones. Yeah. Major product updates. A lot of companies come to us with these really, really small updates, the Google Plus buttons or things like that. And they get really upset when we don't write about them. Because, you know, you probably put a lot of work into this, but we can't write about everything. So, funding. Yeah. If you're looking for, you know, raising capital, large angel round, Series A, you know, you've got a few millions in the bank. We at TechCrunch, that's our specialty. Not every publication writes about this, but for us, that's kind of what we do. So that's something to know about. And large partnerships. Say, you're working with Microsoft suddenly. You know, Microsoft is using your tool somewhere. Yeah. Other companies. That'd be a good spot to start talking to us. That's for news stories. That's what I do for the most part. But your local newspaper, for example, may be interested in something slightly different. They might want to have kind of the human interest angle. You know, how does your product affect people, address common problems? Maybe something has happened in your community that's related to your product. You don't have news, but a reporter would probably at that point be really interested in talking to you and say, hey, you know, and our bees are dying. Let's stay with the bee problem. Beekeeper, bankrupt, bad things, and you say, well, if they had used my tool, you know, things would have been a lot better. That would help. One thing we get a lot is case studies, from people commission case studies and white papers and all those things. We get that. In this case, it's more about, hey, you want to go in depth for your product. It's more like a magazine story, maybe, or a long feature article in a newspaper. Feel free to add that when you pitch a news story as well. For me personally, it's not really the stories I'm interested in because I'm really news focused. But it's something to be aware of when you're pitching other people. And this kind of stuff, obviously, you can pitch any time. We need time to write these stories. A news story, I can write in 15 minutes. You know, that's my job, write that stuff fast. If it's breaking news, I can get it out really fast. But ideally, I'd like to talk to you a little bit beforehand. Maybe even, you know, set up a phone briefing, not just do email. Have some time with you. It depends totally on the reporter. Some people, if you talk to a magazine, obviously you need a long lead time. If you talk to a newspaper, maybe a little bit less. You talk to a blogger, like me, I'm fine with 3 days ahead of something like that. You know, come to me 2-3 days ahead with a story. That's probably all right for me. Some of my colleagues prefer a week. It's just depends on who you're talking to. For me, if you talk to me a month beforehand, that's way too early. By the end of most days, I have no clue what I wrote. I've totally forgotten about what happened in the morning. I don't know anymore. So if you pitch me a month ahead, I've long forgotten what you were pitching. You know, maybe I put it on my calendar, maybe I didn't. It's way too early. All right, this is a tough one because it really totally depends on the publication and on the author who you should talk to. Yep. You got to figure out who you want to talk to because we all have really different interests. We've got 15 to 20 writers at TechCrunch. We all care about different things. I care about, you know, I write a lot about Microsoft. I write a lot about Google. I write a lot about startups that focus on developers. It's very different from what, you know, a friend of mine focuses on, who focuses on car sharing services like Uber and Lyft and those kinds of things. If you pitch me the wrong story, it ends up in those 60,000 unread emails, right? And you will think, oh, TechCrunch doesn't care. Well, we care. Somebody probably cares. You just didn't get it to the right person. It just goes unread. So read what people write. Find out what kind of stories they're interested in, what kind of stories they like to tell. It's just, is that person the right fit for me? If you have, you know, if what you do is social networking, I may not be the right person for you to talk to, but I can tell you who, you know, could be the right person to talk to. Most publications also have like a really general address to send your pitches to. That's not quite as effective as reaching the right person. But we have, for example, have tips at techcrunch.com. You know, there's other publications you have to, it's pretty much always tips at mashable.com, tips at thenextweb.com. So it's always tips at theverge.com. They all have the same kind of format for the most part. You can find it on their websites. All right, once you got me, you hooked me in, and we'll talk about how you do that a little bit later. You got to start building a rapport with me, right? I got to trust you. If you don't give me the right information that I can trust, it happens all the time. People totally exaggerate. We've got 2 million users. You know, and you look on Twitter and nobody's ever written about them. It's pretty unlikely they really have 2 million users. Revenue, you know, we make $50 million every year. Yeah, you probably don't. But it happens, and it's sad, because sometimes it's a really good product, and it just doesn't happen. So we don't write about them, because they were just lying to us, and we know that. We've got pretty good detectors for those kinds of things. As I said before, this is kind of a pet peeve of mine. Don't pitch minor updates. Don't expect every time I talk to you, it will be a story. You know, sometimes you just want to chat with me for some reason, and I accept the chat, but it doesn't mean it always leads to a story. Not every single time. You know. Sadly, people get really upset when, you know, they talk to you and they think, oh, you know, but we talked about the Facebook button. Eh, still not a story. All right. Probably the number one way to talk to reporters outside of conferences like this, where you can just grab us pretty much, is email. 60,000 unread emails. So you got to get it right the first time. Short, informative, have your media kit there. That email is pretty much your 30-second pitch. Start with that. This is what we do. Maybe even in the headline. We're, you know, big data analytics for beekeeping. Right there in the headline. Those headlines are an art, not a science. You can get it right, you can get everything right, and we still miss it. It happens. Yeah. And then maybe send it again a few days later if you don't hear from us. But you gotta make it stand out. One of the messages I often get is the subject will just have your company's name. Doesn't tell me anything. I wake up to 250 emails in the morning. If it's just your company name, may not even get opened. You know, you have to tell me, what are you doing? What's special about your project? Is it the biggest, the fastest, the newest? What's happening here? Why should I write about this? You got to convince me to write about it, right? Again, sounds really arrogant, but it's the only way we can work with the mass of pitches we get. in that email, focus on the story, the product, maybe the background later on, but it's got to start with that 30-second pitch. Get everything right, because if you make a bad first impression, lots of spelling mistakes, formatting doesn't work in the email, it's one of those red flags where you think, maybe the product itself isn't really all that good, and why should I check it out? It's a lot of them. The perfect way to get a hold of us is through your friends and mentors. You probably have a friend somewhere who's been featured on TechCrunch, on Mashable, in the New York Times, somewhere. Or your mentors know somebody at a publication. I can guarantee you I will open that email. If I know the person, if I trust that person, if it's from a, you know, maybe it's a startup we've written about, a friend from a startup, you know, just have them send me an email. Say, hey, you should really talk to those guys. Because I'll probably trust them. I know them. They'll end up really high in my inbox. And you at least get an introduction. Doesn't mean you get an article, but at least means you get an introduction. Know what we do. Understand a little bit about the media and how we work. Yeah, kind of telling you that. But there's two things to think about here. When you get a big launch, make sure you share the information ahead of time and ask for an embargo or an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, which we work like that every day. Somebody tells me, hey, we've got a big launch on Thursday. 11 a.m. Pacific time is the embargo or the NDA time. That means if I accept that and they tell me more information about it, I'm pretty much honor-bound not to write about it before 11 a.m. Pacific time. We do that all the time. In the PR world, there's this rumor TechCrunch doesn't do embargoes. We do. We do it every day. I do it 3 times a day, probably. So if somebody says, but you shouldn't talk to TechCrunch ahead of time, just make advertising for myself here a little bit. If somebody tells you that, just tell them, no, a reporter told me it's cool, and it's true. Sometimes when you're really small, it can help, and you're not sure that anybody will pick up your news. It could help to offer an exclusive. Come to, you know, you go to the next web and say, hey, we'll give you the exclusive on our launch. You're the only publication we're going to talk to. Everybody else has to read it on your site. We love exclusives. It's like the bear at the park loved his honey or apple juice, whatever it was. We love exclusives. It makes my face light up when I get an exclusive. And it's almost guaranteed I'll take it because it's something where I can tell to the other publications, hey, you know, you guys didn't get that. And we like that. But the downside is that other publication may say, well, they're just working with TechCrunch. I'm not going to even talk to them next time around. So there's a trade-off there. But if you're small, especially, it might be helpful to at least have that one story out. Okay. Lots of things not to do. Don't get too aggressive. Some days we get people who know it's tough to get through. They'll send the same email 20 times within 20 minutes because they know it will end up in our inbox. It's a shame I didn't have that example on my page there, but that happens because they know how hard it is. I guarantee you we'll not write about them. It's just out of spite. We'll not write about them. No minor updates. We've talked about that. Old news. We get that all the time. Hey, Mashable wrote about us. You should really look into our product. And if somebody else has already written about it, it's old news. We're really focused on what's new, not what other people have already talked about. So that doesn't work very well. One thing, we talked about embargoes, NDAs. Some companies will give different embargo times to different people. It's not good. Then, you know, we're honor-bound kind of not to publish until 11 o'clock, but our competitor got to write about it at 9 a.m., big no-no. Just don't do it. And really, really important, 60,000 unread emails. If it doesn't work the first time, don't give up. Write it again. A lot of people will write the same email again and just put in a headline, second try. Yeah, or trying again, something like that in the subject. And that works. That works. A, they'll have a little number 2 next to me in my inbox there in Gmail, so I already, you know, kind of shows up a little bit. It's different from the rest, so I'll actually see it. And it means you're tenacious. You really want to talk to us, right? You're not giving up that quickly. So we respect that. So try again. It's all right. All right, that's about where my, very much exactly at the 20 minutes I wanted to be at. So we've got a lot of time for questions, and open up the room to you.
So if you wanted to do an exclusive one, would you put that in the subject?
Like, yes. First word. Capitalized. Yeah, absolutely.
And does it offend you if you read the email and there's like CC 15 different...
Yes, yes. Actually, I didn't mention that. I thought about that this morning. You know what's a pet peeve of every technology reporter? I got one of those emails this morning. It says, hey, read Right Web, when they email me. You know, and we're not read Right Web, so why, you know, you not really want to talk to us, or what's the deal? It's just one of those things where it's one of those small mistakes that make a big difference. Right? That's probably an email all of us will laugh about in our back channel and not write about. So, yeah, make sure you get that. All right, other questions?
So you gave an example of a bad subject. Can you give like a good subject?
Sure. Think of it as the first sentence of your elevator pitch. I don't want to show the live email right now, even though what's in there, I haven't checked it for a few minutes. A good example would be one that doesn't even have to have your company name in it. It's not really that important at that point. It could be something that says, you know, $20 million funding from big company, for example. Or you guys don't have that right now, probably. If you do, congratulations. But if you don't, something like, just describe what you do. If you hit the right author with the right story, that author will be really interested in that. So just say what you do. I don't know what you do help me help. So you had it easy because, you know, Microsoft put you in touch with me, for example. But if you want to write a subject, say, you know, crowdsourced emergency relief, you know, featured in Imagine Cup, something like that, right? Something really, really short, 6, 7, 8 words max probably, and just get right to the point. Because if it's the right author will be interested in it. If it goes to the general tips address, same thing. We all see it, probably. Somebody may pick it up. So something really succinct, short, very detailed. We get a lot of people who used to work at Google or Yahoo or something like that, or, you know, students from a specific university who will say, you know, Stanford students built XYZ, for example. You get that as well. It's a really prestigious school or something. That tends to work well. In Silicon Valley, doesn't necessarily work with your local newspaper. Something to think about. This, as I said, it's an art. It's not a science. It's just you got to play around a little bit. Maybe try, you know, you guys probably all do A/B testing in some form or another. So, you know, try that. Try different approaches. Yes. So you want us to fight? Is that what you're saying? We already do. I mean, I got a Next Web guy threw a banana at me yesterday. You know, so. We want your story, obviously. So exclusives are one way to do that. But we wouldn't know that we would know at that point you didn't give it to the Next Web, right? And we love that too, because we hate the Next Web. That's one way of doing it. The other way is just building that rapport with the specific reporters Yeah, you don't want the reporters to fight with each other, but if you want us to keep coming back to you, you know, just check in with you regularly. We don't do that a lot, to be honest, because we get so much inbound stuff that we don't really do a lot of outbound. You know, in marketing, you would do outbound marketing, right? We don't really do that all that much. But if you have a really cool product, and we love you, and we like to write about it, and it's cool, and you're, you know, a great team, we'll keep coming back to you. One thing I didn't talk about earlier on is one thing that's nice to have on your website is a little company blog where you can put your updates. Because we subscribe to all of those. I'm subscribed to about 2,000 blogs, you know, company blogs, news blogs, everything. And we see that. You know, I read through those. It's my job to do that. It's a lot of stuff. But you know, that way we just keep seeing what's happening in your company. Does that kind of answer your question?
It does. The reason why I ask is because I'm always trying to work out, like, with the media, they are necessary...
you want to say evil, I know.
Yeah,
yeah. Go ahead. It is. I don't want to make it sound like it's any easier than it is. It is hard to build that rapport. It's hard to get through that first step. Once you've made that first step, though, once you've had the first story in a certain publication, we know you. We want to follow up. You know, we want to be there when you take the next step. We want to be there when you get that big round of funding. You know, we want to cover that. It's that first step that's hard. And yes, it takes up a lot of time. And I guess one thing that would help is just to have somebody on the team who spends some time on that, maybe a marketing person in some form or another, who can spend some time on just doing outreach to the media. I think we're all okay if a marketing person talks to us, comes to us. When it comes to doing interviews, it's nicer to have, you know, if it's a really technical thing, it's nicer to have an engineer on the phone or the CEO on the phone. Sometimes the marketing person will set up the interview with the CEO, those kinds of things. It's all perfectly fine. I do that every day. It doesn't really matter, to be honest, that much. As long as the person is comfortable talking in public on the phone, you know, a lot of the interviews are with people that aren't necessarily all that good at it, and we're used to that. It's okay, but it's really nice when you have somebody who's outgoing and can really explain the product. And you got to find that right person in your company. That's for you to do. All right, Microsoft has a question.
I thought it might be interesting to hear about the events. And
yes.
How events play into
mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. I didn't put that in the presentation because we're doing that here right now, right? We've got a reporter at pretty much any event that matters, at least in the U.S. Outside, we've got reporters in Europe who are at a lot of big events. Outside of that, it's a little bit harder. We've got some people in Asia, but it's only two, and so they can't travel all that much. Events are huge because events are the place where you can make that personal connection. Right? If you come up to me later on and say, hey, we've got a really cool product and, you know, we want you to have the exclusive and not the next web, you know, I'll talk to you. Sure, I'll be there. Yeah, I know. He's sitting right there. So. This is the place where you can build that rapport. This is the place where you can just come up to me because that's what I'm here for. I'm here for you. I'm here because I'm interested in what you're doing. I wouldn't be here otherwise, right? I want to be here. I want to hear from you. So this is the events in general are a great place to go. Events are difficult often for startups because they can be really expensive. And you got to figure out if that's worth it or not for you. You know, if you go to maybe Le Web in Paris and it's 2,500 euros, and you're a small startup, you got to figure out if that's worth the cost for you or not to have those. Because it's not just talking to the press, obviously. It's talking to a lot of, you know, investors potentially, and you know, colleagues, and learn a lot of things. But you got to figure that one out. But events in general, when it comes to talking to the press, are amazing. Can you maybe get your product on stage? Even better. You know. Do one of these pitch comps. Apparently, you're all really good at doing pitches, right? You're all really good on stage. You've got something ready already. You know, put it into one of these competitions somewhere. You know, we organize one at TechCrunch around the world. You know, every, you know, San Francisco, New York, Berlin, doing one in Beijing. So, you know, you can come, put it in, apply. You know, every time, hundreds of startups apply for those things. You guys are already good at that. So, you know, give that a try. So, events, yeah, it's what we do.
You've been talking about emails, but what about other channels to get to you, like Facebook and Twitter?
Good question. I should have put that in the don't. it's personally, I'm barely on Facebook, so you know, I would see it weeks after, probably, if at all. Some reporters love that stuff, but I don't know anybody at TechCrunch who would say, "My God, please send me a pitch by Facebook." Not great. Twitter is a little bit of a different thing. Twitter, what I see a lot of startups do is they'll send me a pitch by email. And then they'll follow up by Twitter a few hours later and say, "Hey, did you see my pitch?" Because you can, it's guaranteed that I'll see, you know, a message on Twitter, for example. It's almost guaranteed. So it's not a bad strategy. I don't really want to encourage it because I kind of like my Twitter stream nice and clean and just my friends. But, you know, if you do it, yeah, I'll probably see it because I feel, you know, it's a public room and I feel kind of compelled to answer. So, I don't love it. But it works. I don't know what that says about me, or Twitter, or pitches, but it worked. So.
Would you say maybe Twitter is a way that you can start establishing a bit of a rapport? Like, yep. You're following their articles and commenting on their articles, and then down the road, then it's easier to broach them.
Fair point. It is. But you got to be careful not to go like in the sycophant kind of. It's got to be genuine. That's what I, you know, said at the beginning. It doesn't. If it just feels like you're trying to market, and I know you are. You know, don't get me wrong. I know you're trying to market to me, but if that's all you're doing on Twitter, I can figure that out pretty quickly. And that happens a lot. There's like people will say, "Oh, this is an amazing article." Never do that in like your emails. It'll immediately feel like you're lying to me. And a lot of people will say, "I read this really great article from you about XYZ." And we're doing, you know, this, and there's no relationship between the two. It's just almost like somewhere in the world there's a formula for startups to do that, and it doesn't work. But people keep seeing that somewhere all the time. It's just annoying. But so genuine. You know. Don't make it up. If you don't have a relationship with me, it's fine. I talk to a lot of people for the first time every day. Okay. Yeah, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is the bane of my existence because people keep sending me like LinkedIn messages. Hey, and then they can give you like a thumbs up or something on LinkedIn, right? They can give you credibility. I don't know what it is, like cloud-like. Yeah. It never feels right. So, yeah. Then suddenly you're an expert in social media or something. It just isn't. It's not good. Right, other questions? How many of you have been covered in the media? You've been covered locally? How did that happen for you? Somebody want to, what was your example? Well, you've been covered in TechCrunch, so that was easy. But how did they find you?
Awesome. So it's like a gradation.
Right.
And
Yeah, it's amazing. That's hackathons. Actually, a great example. Hackathons are great. You know, you meet a lot of people. They're usually organized. They're often organized by media organizations, or they're there. It's fun. You're coding for 24 hours straight. Lots of Red Bull, unlike here in Russia, apparently. So it's great. It's a great way of getting started, meeting a lot of people, too. Somebody had a question, though. Did I stop you? Sure. Doesn't matter. Doesn't really matter where you're based, for the most part. When it comes, it matters when it comes to funding and all those things and getting money in Silicon Valley, sure. But first and foremost, we're interested in the cool product, in the cool project. We have an editor at large who's constantly in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, Eastern Europe. We just did an event in Warsaw, and we were out in the Balkans last couple of weeks with one of our editors. So we're all over the place. We love that stuff. That's, you know, we're not just a Silicon Valley-based organization. We cover a lot. We've got three writers in London. You know, we cover a lot of international stuff. It doesn't stop anything. It makes it maybe a little bit harder because it's harder to get that first kind of at an event or so connection, but otherwise, it's really, we don't care where you're based. Those days are long over. Yeah. Everything is a Silicon Valley now, right? Berlin is Silicon Valley. Paris wants to be Silicon Valley. I don't know. Dubai wants to be Silicon Valley in the desert. I don't know. It's just, you know, it doesn't matter. It's fine. Your product is what counts. Your group is what counts. Your organization is what counts. After that, you're on Skype, probably. I'm on Skype. We can talk. It's fine. Those doesn't matter anymore. Sure. Yeah, let me say that, by the way. A lot of companies will come and say, hey, I can write that article for you. That's not a good idea. No, I'm halfway decent at what I do, and I know my audience probably better than what you do. So, you don't have to write the article for me. No, but it happens every day. Here's a byline for you or something like that. You know?
So now I was wondering, how do we work out the shape of the article to the most effective? We had an experience in startups, these have articles that come to the market, running your message, or is it just keeping yourself out there on the media, people come up with the goal? Because I always wonder, what is the best type of article? Because people say, the journey articles, the story articles about where it come from, are the ones that show product success launch. Mm-hmm.
If you're gonna
hold out the same engine between one big article, what should it be? Should it be the exclusive launch? Should it be the journey?
If I would say it's the exclusive launch, if those are the two options, because that can include the story about the journey, and you get the whole package. Or just the story about the launch in general. It doesn't have to be exclusive, right? I mean, if that's one option to do it, but if you can pitch six media organizations, and they all more or less commit to writing about you at the embargo time, at the NDA time, that's awesome, right? And they'll all write a different article, and the impact is going to be a lot higher, and it means there's a higher chance of it getting shared on Facebook, Hacker News, whatever, you know, is relevant for your organization, with, you know, a beekeeping forum, whatever just matters at that point. So you got to figure out what's the most, for what I'm seeing, you know, when the companies come back to me afterwards and say, hey, this really worked or this didn't work, or when somebody shares statistics somewhere about an article that was written about them, it's the launch usually that gets the highest bump in terms of, you know, things like new users, sign-ups. And don't expect too much of that, right? You will get 10,000 people to your site, and the sign-up rate may be 2%, 5%, which is generally, it's not that bad, actually, for the most part. And then the retention rate of that will not be all that high. So don't expect that one TechCrunch article is going to launch your company, you know, into the stratosphere. It's always a long haul. It's a step on the way. And it's a good step because a lot of venture capitalists, for example, read all these things, and it's a way for them to find interesting companies as well, right? It's not just the readers. I mean, it's the readers, and you know the readers matter, and those readers are often the ones that make decisions about what happens to your company later on. So, again, I'm not sure I answered your question 100%, but I think. All right. Somehow my presentation went dark there.
Mm-hmm. Is that like, do you follow every company you've been writing about, or is that only the companies that you realize that you follow?
No, I follow a lot of companies I hate. I really hate companies, but companies I'm not interested in, because they could be acquired by a company I really like, right? So I follow anybody. I'm an omnivore, you know. On my desk, I've got three big screens. On a regular day, the setup is Twitter. You have TweetDeck on one side, RSS reader with thousands of feeds in it, and you know, my email on one side. Now, it all goes away once I start writing. Then it all just disappears and it becomes research, you know, editor and more research. But in that phase where you're looking for stories, that's the setup. And you know, just bring it. Yeah. It's what we do. We filter stuff. That's our job, because you know, our readers expect interesting stories from us. All right, other questions? Nobody?
I guess on a totally different note, how many hours do most writers or media people spend a week? Is this like a 60-hour week?
How many hours are there in a week? I can describe kind of my average day. I think it's pretty standard for a lot of people in my industry. I wake up around 7 or so, start working. And like many of you, first thing I do before I put on my glasses, look at my smartphone. I just look through those emails, see what I'm missing, because you can't be in this business unless you're totally OCD, I think, and just have to be on top of everything, like a news hound. About 8, I start writing news for the most part at that point. You know, breaking news, stuff I find on blogs, maybe stuff from interviews the evening before, so kind of the day kind of continues in many ways. Focuses on news for the most part until about noon, lunch, and then lots of briefings, more news, more briefings, usually about 3 briefings a day most days. Big companies, small companies, startups, everything. Then dinner, and then often the next step is write about the briefings you had before, because they're embargoed for 6 a.m. in the morning, and I don't want to wake up at 5 a.m. to write a story. So I write that at night, and then it just continues. However, it sounds like a long day, but come the weekend, I'm off. I'll shut off. It's just I'm out, done. Yeah, you can. One of the problems with technology writing is burnout. A lot of us burn out very quickly because it's a very it's a demanding job. And you spend your whole time looking at emails and looking at RSS feeds, and it just keeps coming and coming and coming. It's hard. And often, you know what's the hardest thing? Saying no to the startups. This last week I had to tell a company, you know, I took a briefing and I said, you know what, guys, your product isn't quite there yet. And it's sad, because when I take a briefing, that's usually like step 2 after the email and everything, and you think it's a really good product, and then it's really disappointing. It's kind of, it's hard. It just kind of breaks my heart, because I'm a softie. So. But that's your average day. So, and average day, I write about 4 to 5 stories. Some people write more. Some people write less. Depends on the length of the stories. And if it's a startup profile, a longer startup profile, it'll, you know, it takes an hour or two to write, and it's probably write a little bit less over the course of the day. We write fast. Yeah. It's our job is to write fast. We've got copy editors now, which is really nice, so our typos don't show everywhere. All right. No more questions. Every question answered about the media. Any general questions about, you know, the business, getting featured, what happens afterwards? It's, if I get the question right, it's, I like emails going back and forth, but at some point it makes more sense to go over to Skype and just have a real phone call, because it's faster, more efficient, and I like to actually hear from you. I get a lot more out of that. It's a little bit less canned. I can put a quote in my story that's, you know, exclusive probably. The other ones don't have that. Most of the stories I write are based on, I mean, not the news, not the breaking news story, you know, not the Microsoft releases XYZ story, but the ones about the startups, are almost always based on an in-person interview in some form, not in-person, but the one-on-one interview in some form or another. It's kind of why I like my job, to be honest, because I like to talk to really smart people, because you're all smarter than me, no doubt about it. So, yeah, that's the perk of my job. I get to talk to really interesting people doing really interesting stuff, and I want to do that. So, but sometimes it just means I'm really busy, and can we just do a Q&A, especially if it's the second or third time that you this news. But, yeah, definitely, at some point I'll talk to you. Yes.
You do rather expect people to come up to you and start.
I'd be really disappointed if they didn't come up to me. Yeah, I was at an event, my first event with TechCrunch. It was I mean, it wasn't horrible, but it was just, I didn't see that coming. I left with about this stack of business cards. I never wrote about the event because it was just people coming at me. So sometimes, can't do it with these ones, but most of the ones don't have anything on the back. Sometimes you just turn it around. It feels bad to complain about that because it's a really good problem to have. We're very fortunate that people want to talk to us. But please, talk to me. That's why I'm there. That's why I'm here. If you guys want to talk to me afterwards, I'm here. That's what I do. All right, everybody's out-questioned. Okay, apparently we're supposed to, before we end, and...
Power saver.
Don't worry, you're supposed to fill out your evaluations. I think that's what the last slide says. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. Any way you want, good or bad.
Just determine whether you get paid.
No, they already paid for my flight, disclosure. So, and AOL pays me, so it's, you know, let's see. That works. Thank you. And please come and talk to me afterwards if you want to talk about your product or you want to give me your 30-second pitch. Yeah, I'm here. Alex wants to give me his 30-second elevator pitch.
We need to talk. You don't look good.
Well, not here, but they're listening.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
It's a very interesting talk with the boss.
All right, we'll do that. Give me like 15 minutes or so. Is that okay? Because people probably want to chat. Yeah. All right, I hope it was useful.
No, I'm like, don't do it.
Hey, thank you. Was it good? Did it work?